Shoal Creek, we didn't know you were in Titus. So since then, we're in Titus. We've made it up to about the beginning of chapter 2. So just kind of remind everyone where we are. Paul's writing to his buddy Titus, and he's giving him some instructions. One being, you need to ordain elders in every city. They need to have some certain qualifications, and they need to have all those so they can do something. And that primarily do something is holding fast. If they're going to have adversaries, the vain talkers and deceivers who are going to be teaching things that are errors and lies because they want money. They are corrupted by the influence of desiring money, and so they're going to teach things that they ought not be teaching. So the men that you choose need to have all these qualifications, and they need to be able to stand fast. Right, so that's where we ended up in chapter 1. Chapter 2, Paul shifts his attention back to Titus. Says, let's speak now. So he's giving Titus some specific instructions. This is what you need to be teaching. And that word speak means to talk, to utter, to preach, to say. This is going to be a constant frame that he's going to be discussing. What is actual godliness? Because those deceivers, those false teachers, are going to be trying to reframe godliness as something else. Something that is allowing you to indulge in your carnal desires, your carnal lust, and give them money. That's how it gets distorted. So you need to be finding men who are going to have the sound qualifications, teach them that they will hold fast in the word as they've been taught, and then you need to be teaching, speaking, uttering what is godliness. What does it look like? But seek thou the things which become sound doctrine. Alright, so we may not use that word sound very much. We probably do use it. You probably just don't think about it. You ever call mom? Yeah, I got home safe and sound. Right? They don't even know what it means. Whole. Wholesome. Uncorrupt would be a good way to describe it. So he needs to be teaching, speaking, uttering wholesome, uncorrupt doctrine. And there's a word before that I kind of just glossed over. It's become. I never really looked at the word become before. I looked at it this week. You know what it literally means? It means to tower up. It's kind of neat, right? To tower up, to be conspicuous. What's implied there is something that is suitable and proper. So that which is becoming, it points out to the fact that this is godly behavior. It's becoming of godliness. So if you are doing something that's unbecoming, you're not building up godliness, right? You're tearing it down. So we need to say and speak things, teach things that tower up, that become conspicuous of pointing to what is the right thing. Well, visible, outward, manifesting signs of that which is sound doctrine. All right? Wholesome doctrine. Well, what's doctrine? All right, kids, right? You hear the word doctrine and you kind of check out, right? What does doctrine mean? Adults. It means instruction, teaching, learning. Titus, these are things you're going to have to teach, instruct, so that they can learn them. Right? How do you do that? How do you teach doctrine? Well, over in Isaiah 28, 9 and 10 talks about it being line upon line, precept upon precept, right? Just flip to that real quick. I won't spend much time here at all, but just Isaiah 28, verse 9, whom shall he teach knowledge, and to whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Them that are weaned from milk and drawn from the breast. For precept must be upon precept. Precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line. Here little and there little. Okay? So it's saying that you've got to have the foundations, and they all build on each other. Precept, the definition of that is, it's a technical legal term, it's an injunction. When you go to the court and you want them to force somebody to do something, you ask for an injunction. It says, make them do this thing. It's a command. So God has given you a command. These are precepts, a command to build upon commands. And the line is literally not referring to a line of text. It's referring to a line like a chord, a geometry term, a chord. Or imagine a line on like blueprints. How you get from here to here. And you need that line, and you made that line about the building, and slowly you get all these layers to build your structure. Line upon line, precept upon precept. All right? So these are things that you need to be teaching. Teaching them slowly, teaching them often, teaching them regularly, so that you're teaching those who are believing in the Lord Jesus Christ what does godliness actually look like. Because you're going to have to be pushing against, back against the ideas of those who are corrupt. These false teachers, these deceivers, these wolves in sheep clothing. Right? All right. So speak thou the things which become sound doctrine. So Titus, these are the things you need to speak. All right. So it starts off by talking to the aged men. That the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, sound in faith and charity and patience. Whew. All right. We moved through that one. Right? You got it all? There's a lot in there. There's a lot in there. And sisters, before you check out, I'm going to start with verse 3 that says, likewise. Likewise, that they and be in behavior has become of holiness. This all applies to y'all too. So this isn't, you're not excused from this verse. I may not get beyond this verse today. But it's directing, it's starting by talking to the aged men. Alright. What's an aged man? Alright, so this the Greek word that's defined as old man. Aged men only appears 3 times in Scripture. Once is referring to John the Baptist's father. Remember when the angel came and visits Zacharias? And he tells him, you're going to be a daddy. You're going to name him John. And he doesn't believe him, right? What does he say? He says, I'm an old man. He was beyond his childbearing years. He was an old man. And the other time is in Philemon 1 and 9, where Paul is writing and he's describing himself now as Paul the aged. Right? So I heard some people want to say, well, the aged man, that can be, you know, anyone who's old enough to have a mortgage. you need to be men, young men, conscious of these things. But this is saying the aged men, you need to be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, and charity and patience. It doesn't say you need to be learning how to be. Says be as a present tense verb. That means now. Young men, y'all gotta be learning. This is why there's a distinction. But the aged men and aged women, you need to be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, and charity and patience. You read it just like that quickly, if you're just doing your check the box reading in the morning, guess what you've gotten out of it? Yeah. Next to nothing. Right? So we're going to go slowly. We looked up the Strong's definitions for each of these words, and we're going to try and expand upon it. I won't be able to tell you everything there is about this. Men, part of your job is to be studying the Word, meditating on it, continuing to chew on it. I cannot feed you everything you need to sustain you throughout the week or in your life or in growth. There is personal responsibility of what we need to be doing in our own lives. Individually, and as we lead our families, our spouses, and our children. There's a strong obligation. So we're going to start off with sober. Now, we talked a lot back with a couple weeks ago in the second part about the qualifications for being a bishop, about the word sober. And we were relating it to the guard on the tower wall, right? Well, guess what? This sober is a different Greek word. Okay? This sober translates to circumspect. Okay. So apparently we're in geometry this morning. You know, you've heard of circumference? Right? It's the distance around a circle. Right? So circumspect means to be looking around. You're weary. You're cautious. You are alert. You are looking for risks so you can avoid them. So aged men and sisters, you are to be sober. You are to be circumspect. Your eyes are to be open, looking around for risks, for dangers. So you're not caught unawares. Your eyes should be open by the experience that you've had in your life and your understanding in Scripture. That there is a time in your life, my goodness, there's time in all of our lives where we get on autopilot, right? You can be driving along on your route to work, and you can pass 7 or 8 stop signs, and you think, yeah, I really hope I stopped because I don't remember. That's not being circumspect. Circumspect is when you first start driving, you're 15, you've got the driver's ed student there, and they say to check every mirror. I'll hurt your neck a little bit. But you know exactly what's going on all the way around your car, right? What's going on in this lane, what's going on in front of you, what's going on in that lane, what's behind you. You are actively monitoring, looking for risk and for dangers. Because guess what? You live in a sin-cursed, fallen world. Those dangers can be external, and there's a lot of them. They can also be internal. When did that old man try to lead you down the wrong path? How much easier is it to get off that wrong path when you're still right there at the fork, rather than when you've gone way down it? And you've gotten sucked in the mud and the mire. The difference between being alert and sober and circumspect and looking around actively can be the difference for how long before you discover that you're in error. Or that you can see that there's a brother or sister in the church who is going down the wrong path. Sometimes we get into our head that it's really just the preacher's job if he needs to address something. I can see somebody is going the wrong way. Well, I'll just tell him he can do it. That is one way. That's probably not the best way. The best way, brothers and sisters, is for your great love for one another that you go to that person individually, privately, and try to teach, gently rebuke. This is an individual responsibility for each of us. The relationships that we have, the closer we are with one another, the more they will trust us when we're coming and telling us. You're not saying this just to drive them down or to make them feel bad or call out something that you're doing yourself. Oh, don't do that. That's the whole moat and beam conversation, right? You lose all credibility if you're coming to let your brother or sister know, I know that you're not doing so great. And they're like, yeah, but you're doing the exact same thing. Right? So we need to be circumspect. Aged men, aged women, you need to be circumspect. Be sober. Be constantly alert and on guard. Have the head on swivel. I think that's a military term, right? You're trying not to get shot. Right? Okay? Sober. How about grave? Now, when I read the term grave, I kind of get like a Bill Cosby expression in my fingers. I feel like, well, you should be grave. It's not what it's referring to. If you look up the word grave, the definition, it gives you a great word, venerable. You don't know what that means? I didn't. I had to look it up. Venerable. Accorded a great deal of respect. So if one is going to be accorded a great deal of respect, what does one have to be? Respectable. Right? You should be conducting your life, your words, your actions, in a manner that people are going to respect you. You should be modeling what it is to be honorable, to be worthy of honor, to show the extreme devotion to the Lord and reverence to the Lord. I'm sure some of you jump and think about older brothers and sisters that you remember from times past that they just modeled. When they came into the church, they were there for a purpose. It wasn't cutting up. It wasn't playing games. They were there to worship their Lord. And they were serious about it. Right? And they generally wouldn't, I'm thinking of Papa now. They wouldn't tolerate it if you weren't serious. Not saying that my grandfather's idea of tact was exactly right on it. But he was serious about coming to worship. This was coming into the Lord's house, and he was ready to come and to honor God. He wanted to behave, and he modeled what it looked like was to honor God in all things. All right? So to be grave, to be venerable, to be accorded a great deal of respect, we need to be respectable. We need to show that respect. We need to model it, what it looks like. Now, this grave shows up also in the qualifications for deacons and deacon wives. So this is the same, I think it's first listed first over in 1 Timothy 3 and 8. Now, likewise, the deacons must be grave, modeling that respectable, respected behavior. And then down at 11, it says, even so, their wives must also be grave. Okay? Now, this word shows up again, but it's translated differently in Philippians. Philippians 4 and verse 8, remember the, finally, brethren, think whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, goes on. That word honest there is the same word that's translated grave elsewhere. Same Greek word. So, one of the attributes of showing how to be respectful and to be worthy of respect is honesty. And that's followed up in Timothy of the not being double-tongued. Right? Be honest. We should be modeling the behavior of honesty. Devoted to the Lord, honest, respectful. Right? Aged men and aged sisters, be sober, be grave, be temperate. Right? So what's temperate? This is actually the same word earlier that was translated sober for the bishops. So we've still got that allusion to being on the wall, being alert, being watchful. And it's a very similar concept to the other sober. I mean, you're kind of got your head on a swivel. But the idea is that you're focused. You're diligent. You're looking to the return of Jesus Christ every moment of every day. Now, it's not causing you to freeze up and to quit working. You say, well, he's coming back this afternoon, so I don't have to do anything. No, they had to deal with that problem. You're to keep working. You're to keep running your race here below as long as you're here. But that's always your focus. That's always the mind. You're on the wall. You're not on autopilot. You're looking for that Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, coming back like the general coming with his forces to end the war. We're not asleep at our post. We're not drunken. And the root word of that sober is to abstain from intoxicants. Right? It's literally mean sober or clear-minded. But it's referring to that ability to be sound in your mind, to be purpose-driven in your mind, to make a decision that I am going to be sound in my mind, or safe in my mind. So temperate. And part of that, as we talked about, was being disciplined. There's a strong element of self-control in that. That by the time we're aged men, young men, we should be very self-controlled, not flip, not given to flying off the handle. Right? Flying off the handle is kind of the definition of not having self-control. You're admitting that you've lost control. To being self-controlled, both in our passions and in our opinions and in our speech. And one of the great words that was given in the definition of temperate here was discreet. We'll talk about that more later in the sister's portion about the young women, but discreet means to be careful of one's speech and actions, especially in order to avoid causing offense. Now that's Webster's dictionary. Think about that. Being so self-controlled and mindful of what you're saying and what you're doing that you don't want to cause or give offense. Now, offense, we think of that in our political hot button issue of offense, which just means you said something I didn't like. This is not the offense we're talking about. The offense of not leading your brother to offend is not leading them to stumble or to sin or by my bad example, them thinking something is okay. That's when you have this whole conversation that Paul's talking about refraining from eating meats. It's not because he's pro-vegetarian. They're talking about meats that were being offered to idols, and he's saying, you know the truth. You know the truth that idols are nothing. They're not a real thing. And so that eating meat to them is nothing. But there are some people who don't have that knowledge, who think that when they are eating meats offered to idols, that they're actually eating meats offered to other gods. And if you're, by your liberty, knowing the truth that there are no gods, if you're eating it and you're causing him to think it's okay to do it, and he believes that it's wrong, then you're causing him to sin. You're leading him to stumble. Says your knowledge is causing you to be puffed up and think, well, you know, I can do this because I've got the liberty to do it. Well, not all things are profitable for you. You're causing that brother to offend. So that's why he's saying, if it leads my brother to offend, I'll abstain from eating meat. I don't need to because I care more about helping and leading my brother and sister and not leading them down the wrong path. What is all this saying is that Be mindful of the example that you set. Aged men and aged women, you have a good opportunity to either be a wonderful example for what it means to be godly, or you have a terrible opportunity to confuse people about it. That's maybe a little scary. Right? When you're a young person, folks generally aren't looking to you for how to model our lives. Now, when you're a kid and you see a teenager, you may unfortunately use them as a model. But the aged brothers and sisters, if your children are grown, if you're really past that childbearing years, they're talking. Paul is talking to Titus, and Titus is to be talking to you, and all of whom Titus caught. So down to me, we're talking to you. These are traits that you need to model. Live consistently, not put on the facade or the veneer. Give me an easier word. Don't fake it. Don't fake it just because you're around church folk. Live it from the heart outward. Be sober, raised, tempered. Alright? You're circumspect. Your head is on the swivel. You're cautious. You're looking for danger. Externally, internally, for your own benefit, also for the benefit of your brothers and sisters. You're brave. You're showing what it means to live a respectful and honest life. And you're temperate, you're self-controlled in words and in speech. Alright? But if you notice something to chew on, we're going to move on. If we don't have time to continue to dwell, we could. We could. I want to continue to move on, and so we're going to look at the next three. Sound in faith, sound in charity, sound in patience. Alright. So as an aged man, or aged sister, what does it mean to be sound in faith? We just talked about sound being whole, wholesome, uncorrupt, right? By this time, you need to be sound, wholesome in the faith. You need to be stable. You get the expression about being rooted and grounded in the love of Christ. You need to be rooted and grounded in the love of Christ and also in your faith, and your understanding about what Christ did and who Christ is. This is not the time to just be learning the basics, to be drinking that weak milk. Now, there's a time in every Christian's life when you need the weak milk, right? Just the very basics, very beginning. That's fine. That's what we try to do when we have the children up here, is just start with that weak milk. But brothers and sisters, by the time you're aged men and aged women, you need to be on strong meat. You need to have the firm grip on who God is, what He did for you, and why, and what does that mean that you need to do in response? These are all big questions. You can't bite them all up in one day. You got to learn them line upon line, precept upon precept, and it's a lifetime of work to continue to get there. But you need to be sound. Because if you're not, what happens over in Ephesians 4 and 14? It says you're tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine. And what happens, aged brothers and sisters, when you're tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine? Who's looking at you? Who's getting more confused? You may be shifting just a little bit because you got a pretty good handle of it. But you're seeing, you're swaying, that those who don't have as good a handle, those who are younger, maybe Christians, they can be blown. Not tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine. Particularly, remember what we talked in chapter 1, is that there are going to be people teaching false doctrine. Also gives me the image of the double-minded man. Right? In James chapter 1, verse 8, the double-minded man is not stable. Right? We need to be secure, grounded on the rock that doesn't change, and build just there. To know what our faith is, and then we can avoid what's admonished at the end of this chapter, is avoiding those foolish things. Avoiding those foolish questions. Avoiding the genealogies, contentions, and strivings about the law, for they are unprofitable and vain. Brothers and sisters, if you're an aged man, you should not be causing strife, division within the church, pursuing those trivial things. Right? The things where there's not a clear answer in the Word, yet we're going to kind of needle it a little bit, kind of drive a little wedges and put in our personal opinions. Y'all understand this is what it's referring to. Sometimes churches can split up the things that aren't even in the Scripture. People just wondering and conjecturing and getting personal opinions about it. But amen, we need to be stable. Right? And sisters need to be stable in our faith, sound of the faith. All right? Those who are sound in the faith would not be instigating those types of things. Right? All right? Sound in the faith. What else? Sound in charity. It just says in charity, the sound of charity is reading. Sound in faith, sound in charity. Wholesome in charity. Well, what does that mean? Uncorrupt love. What is corrupt love? If you look for the definition of love in your newspapers, in your magazines, on Facebook, at most secular weddings, that is a corrupt definition of love. That love that says, I love you as long as you're good to me. I will tolerate you and be good to you as long as you're good to me. It's a selfish, self-centered, inward-pointing love. What is actual love? What is the love that's described in 1 Corinthians chapter 13? I'm not going to read it for the sake of time. That's a refresher. That's homework. I'll read 1 Corinthians 13 this week. Of what is actual love? Being long-standing, long-suffering, and patient, and believing all things. That is a conscious, deliberate choice pushing out. I'm able to do that because of the love that was put upon me. Because I was still just a vile scoundrel. Yet he loved me anyways. And forgave me innumerable sins. I can't even count all my sins. If I had to sit here and count them, we'd all be here all day. And I'd probably get frustrated and add them to them as I'm sitting. Right? But he still loved me. And that's the model of love that we get. That Christ came and sacrificed himself freely for every single one of his children. He's going to get what he paid for. He's not going to lose a single one. But he did. Willingly. He volunteered. He was obedient under God the Father's will and performed it perfectly. That's love. That's the love that we need to be sound in love. Of being long-suffering to one another. Being patient with another. Well, patience is a whole other topic. But within love is patience. Be sound in love. You're bearing with those who are weaker members. There are going to be brothers and sisters who don't have the same level of faith or knowledge or understanding. How do you respond to that? Do you respond in criticism, with biting sarcasm, with facial gestures, or just, you know, let them know that you think they're stupid even though you haven't said it out loud? Right. None of that is bearing with love. And so by the time we're aged brothers and sisters, we should be sound in showing love. Not just to our immediate family, that's important. But notably to how does that look within the church, with your brothers and sisters. So one who's sound in love is going to be avoiding things like political games. You see that corrupting so many churches. That the power moves, the grabs, who gets the committees and all this other garbage. That's not showing love. That's not putting someone else, everyone else, before you. That's thinking that I am someone else and I should be important and you all need to know it. And no. That's where we're being lifted up with pride and the Lord needs to humble us. But our showing love should be putting forth everyone else's wants and needs before us. And being quick about it, not begrudgingly. Alright? We're not going to be pointing out every fault and deficiency in others. So there's a fine line here, right? There's sometimes when you have to rebuke somebody out of love. But there's also times when you are calling out somebody and you're not doing it in love. You've got the wrong attitude about it. Or maybe it's they finally irritated you enough that you're going to deal with it. The behavior they're doing may be wrong, but your attitude and your heart about how you go about it, that matters just as much. We need to be sound in our charity, our outward manifestation. It's one thing, well, I love you guys, and that's about as far as it goes. Or maybe I even think, I don't even say it out loud, so might show some vulnerability. Right? But if I'm not living it out with every single interaction that I have with my brothers and sisters, am I really modeling it? Okay? Sound in faith, sound in charity, sound in patience. All right, what's the definition of patience? Right, it means not strangling your kids when they're doing it. No. Sound in patience is the cheerful or hopeful endurance. Cheerful or hopeful endurance. So, brothers and sisters, when you are aged, brothers and sisters, you've lived many more years. You've experienced many more things. You've got those opportunities from your life to draw back on and say, this is how the Lord has delivered me. And this is how I learned to trust Him. And you've got all these things that maybe a young Christian doesn't have yet. And so when things are kind of rocking the boat and the world's going crazy and there's a pandemic on and just, you know, the cyclone of stuff that's been going on in the last year, you get an opportunity to model cheerful and hopeful endurance. Whoa. It's not the whining, the complaining, the chicken little, the sky is going to fall down our heads. God's still in control. Let me tell you about this time when He brought me through, and not how great I am that I survived it, but how great is my God. Right? Not giving into not only complaint, not giving into despair. Any of y'all struggle with despair? It just can't get any better. It's terrible. We're not patiently enduring that. Because guess what? I feel like traveling on. I have a home that's so much better. It's going to get better. Well, the things in this world just may get worse and worse for Christ. But okay. If that's how He wants it, well, that's how it's going to be. But that doesn't affect the end goal for us. It doesn't affect how we handle ourselves and govern ourselves and moderate our own lives until we get there. You get the opportunity to stand fast. You're standing on a solid rock. It's not going to be moved. That's whether you've got just a little gentle gale winds, you know, the breezes come along, or whether there's a hurricane that's knocking down everything around you, you still get to stand fast. And He'll give you the strength to do that. Because it's in Him. It ain't in you. Because when we try to do it on our own, we start going out and say, well, I can do this. And we're going to get our little feet chopped off underneath us, and we've got to go back to our knees, and the Lord will build us back up slowly, but we need to be humble. But the point is that we have a foundation that won't be moved. And so, brothers and sisters, when you are in this point of life where you're aged woman, you're aged sister, aged brother, and aged sister, you can be one who is sound in patience. Sound in patience. You're cheerful. You can have a cheerful demeanor even though things are going wrong. Because you know that this is not the end. And you don't have to grow weary of well-doing even though you don't immediately see the rewards. Because most of you have had times in your life where you've had to work and work and work. And then later, you'll see how the Lord has blessed that. Maybe it's you invested a lot of time and energy and love into a particular younger brother or sister, and you just felt like your labors were going nowhere. Like the little snot went off to law school, and he was never going to come back to church. I had a conversation with your brother when I was in college, and he said, you know, when I left Applebee's that day, I thought, I am never going to see Jonathan in church again. I was not doing right. But he and other people continued to invest and love on me until the Lord finally jerked a knot in my tail. And I'm still enjoying the benefit of the labor and love that they put into me. So as young people, it's hard to do that because we're used to instant gratification. I want to have what does that Facebook notice right now? Don't take 5 minutes to load. What are we talking about? You know? We're so sucked into immediate, I did something, now give me my reward, right? I participated. Where's my blue ribbon? And I think that's pervasive. That's not just young folks. I mean, we live in an instant gratification culture. You want me to cook? But I have a microwave. I got to preheat the oven. That'll take 15 minutes. Right? It's all silly stuff. But that really is one of the things that really we struggle with. We are so used to having immediate instant or near instant gratification. The concept of laboring is something for a long time, and you may not see the fruits being borne out for years. What? I know Brother Parrish has got his peanuts down to the day when he's supposed to be able to see some fruit, right? Can you imagine planting them today and not seeing them for 4 or 5 years? It'd be kind of discouraging, particularly for a young person who's never actually seen them born out. But as an aged brother and sister, you've been able to see. You can be that encouragement, and you can continue to bear patiently, enduring all the way to the end. Now, I wasn't here when Brother Floyd passed, but from everything I heard, that he patiently endured, and cheerfully endured right up to the end. What an example! What a testament! Now, I would love for Jesus Christ to be here and us be able to physically observe him, how he would interact with people. And we can read about that and see glimpses of it. But the next best thing is seeing our aged brothers and sisters modeling his behavior where we can see it with our natural eyes. What a testament. What an encouragement. I know you had that, Sister Patty. And I had it with Papa. And those calls of, John, why aren't you in church today? Every Sunday afternoon, as soon as he got home, I knew if it was a lunch Sunday or not, what time he called me. But they faithfully endured and patiently endured, and they cheerfully endured, and they didn't give up. Right? I'm not saying that you'll never get discouraged. I didn't say that. But this is where, young men, young women, this is where we need to be working towards. We ain't there yet. Right? But this is where we need to be working towards. One or two more thoughts. Maybe. Sound impatient. So I'm going to have some patience with me for a minute. Alright. Aged men, be sober, grave, temperate. Sound in faith and charity and patience. The aged women likewise, means in the same manner, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness. Those descriptions that we just gave for the men, that's what it's referring to. Behavior that becometh holiness. Brothers and sisters, this is what we need to be doing. They be in behavior as becometh holiness. Holiness is the deliberate setting apart for God. Hallowing, saying, this is God's. Right? That's what we set this building about. We don't come in here, we don't have basketball games. Right? This place is set apart for God. Well, guess what? Each of you have been purchased by God with the Son of His only God, with the blood of His only Son. You're His. You need to set your part, your whole body, mind and soul, apart for God. And that needs to be visible. Right? An outward manifestation of your holiness. These are the behaviors you need to be modeling because you have set yourself apart for God. Why can you do that? Because you're so great? No, because He loves you and because He's born you again and you now have spiritual life. And this is what the new man wants to do. This is what he was created for. You're created for good works. These are some of the good works. Your old man does not want you. He wants you to go and hang out in the mud, to get mucked and mired, and be gross and dirty, and don't read your Bible, don't come to church, and watch the garbage on TV, and read the filthy novels, and get sucked into the news, and feel like, oh, I gotta know everything, and so I can remain in control. Guess what? You're in control. If you think you're in control, you're suffering from an illusion. Right? But we serve who is in control. And guess what? There's nothing that surprises him. There's no breaking news, and God's like, what? No. There's nothing to startle him. There's nothing he can't handle. That's who's in charge. You're not in charge. We work for who's in charge. And so, you and I need to be behaving in a manner that becomes, right, that visible tower that we're building up. This behavior looks, acts, walks and talks like holiness, like something that has been set aside for God's service. That's not something that has been repurposed for God's service for 1 hour Sunday morning and maybe 30 minutes on Wednesday night. Set aside and remains there. These are high standards. This is not something the world wants you to think about. This one, the world wants you to listen to their advertisers, spend your money here. No. This is something different. This is something, if you ain't got eyes to see from God, you can come in here and think we're a bunch of crazy people. And we are, but we like to spend the time here. Set aside. Zealous for good works. That's right. Not false accusers. We're going to end on this one. Not false accusers. Alright. So this is something really interesting. And sisters, don't get upset that this is mentioned after the sisters. Okay? I think there's a reason for this. And the reason that I've got in my head, well, why would I mention this after we're shifting to the aged women, not being false accusers. In your marriage, who talks more? I'd say it's fairly safe. The general rule that sisters tend to enjoy speaking more. Given that, one who speaks more will have more opportunities to fall into this. One who's silent is not going to accuse people of anything, right? And so that's not condemning sisters for enjoying to talk. I think that's the way God created you. That's okay. That's good. But there is a temptation to be a false accuser. And what does a false accuser literally mean? The Greek word there is diablo. Diablos. Ever heard that? You ever play the game Diablo? It's where you're playing the devil. Right? It was back when I was a kid. But the word diablo means devil. And in some spots where it's referring to Satan himself, it uses that same word. Well, what does that word mean? It means a slanderer. Slanderer. That's an offense. You can sue somebody. You slandered me. You said something that's not true about me. Okay? So how does that apply to us? I'm not saying that you're devils. I'm not saying that at all. But brothers and sisters, because brothers, this applies to you too. You go talk to the soldiers and the men who came to those other groups who came to John the Baptist and asked, what should we do to work the works of righteousness? One of the things he told them is don't be false accusers. Okay, so men, you're not out of the woods. Pay attention. Slanderers is that we need to be very, very careful about the information we choose to relay. If you do not know it to be true and accurate, don't relay it. Now, this is true whether you're having a private, casual conversation with somebody. This is true whether you're asking for prayer for somebody. This is true if you're just forwarding on a Facebook post. If you don't know it to be true, don't pass it on. If it helps, don't. Particularly if you are attacking somebody else and saying this person has done something or didn't do something. We have a duty to only speak the truth. And it's no defense. Expression in law school is that ignorance of the law is no defense. Well, it's no defense of being a false accuser if you say, well, I didn't know. If you don't know, don't say it. This is how gossip really gets going. And this is one of the manifestations of gossip. It's when you are spreading things that you do not know that to be true. Now, I'm going to do an additional note on this. Of even if you know it to true, it's true and you don't have permission to share it, keep your mouth shut. Okay? There are rare exceptions to that where you've got someone you're trying to protect from physical harm or there's some form of intervention that needs to be done. But y'all understand the difference between those rare exception, magnitude level 10, something's got to be done. I know they told me not to say anything, but I have to. Those are very, very rare. Generally, it's the other scenario of, well, they didn't say I couldn't say it. If they didn't say you could say it, don't say it. Okay? This is one of the manifestations of love. And this is one of the attributes that we have with brothers and sisters of being able to trust each other. that how can I come to Brother Abraham and tell him the sin that I'm struggling with and I want him to pray for me with and hold me accountable for it if I find out next week that he's gone and told everybody about it? Our relationship is damaged. I'm not going to feel comfortable probably going to anybody. Now, I'm not going to have the accountability, and I'm probably going to be defensive about the sin that I was doing anyway. Well, real articulate argument, I know, right there, but. So, we're not to be false accusers. We're not to be slanderers, saying anything about other people, whether they're brothers and sisters, whether they're politicians. I know if their mouths are moving, they're probably lying, but still, if we don't know something to be true, don't pass it on. It is more important for us to maintain and display integrity in all that we do than to pass along this juicy little tidbit. Well, have you heard? I think this is important when you get over into 1 Thessalonians 4:11, where it talks about studying to be quiet. Not every thought that comes into your head or every word that you hear that's in your ear needs to come out. That's actually a characteristic of having wisdom, of knowing when to speak and when to remain silent. So, I'll leave you with these few thoughts. Thank you for your time and attention, and Lord bless you.